Truth be told, Lars has welcomed naysayers for 27 years, but occasionally...
Who is this person who speaks to me as though I needed his advice?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on Wednesday. I'll get back to your phone calls and emails shortly, but I want to talk to Glenn Roper first, who's a senior attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation that goes to bat for a lot of good causes. So, Glenn, can you help me and my audience understand this? The Biden administration's Department of Ag, and we talked about this at the time, forgave $4 billion in farm loans for farmers, but white farmers were left out of the deal. What's happening with that case?
You know, that thanks for having me on, Lars.
Sure.
To talk to you again. This was one of the most egregious examples of racial discrimination that I've seen in recent history, where the Democratic-controlled Congress enacted this law, part of the American Rescue Plan. You may recall that in the post-COVID
yep.
era. And thrown in there was this provision saying, we're going to forgive farm loans for socially disadvantaged farmers. And the way that the Biden administration interpreted socially disadvantaged was based entirely on race. Basically, any farmer who is of any race other than white would have their federal farm loans forgiven, whereas white farmers were totally excluded.
So how do you go about fixing that?
Yeah, well, we went to litigation. We represented farmers across the country, pro bono. We're a public interest law firm, so we don't charge our clients attorney fees. We brought lawsuits challenging this as a violation of the equal protection principles in the Constitution. And we were able to get federal court injunctions preventing the Department of Agriculture from distributing relief in this racially discriminatory way.
Okay. And so are white farmers going to be made whole, as lawyers like to say?
Well, fortunately, we were able to get an injunction put in place before they started distributing this relief based on race. And then Congress came back when I think they saw the writing on the wall and realized after multiple courts enjoined this that they were and they removed that provision. They rescinded the program. So we thought that things were pretty much resolved, that we'd successfully defended against this racially discriminatory program. But what we're hearing now, based on inside whistleblower accounts from the USDA, is that that didn't stop the Biden administration. And rather than complying with these court orders and the statute being rescinded, they then decided to surreptitiously reach out to a select group of farmers, again, minority farmers and excluding white farmers, and start to offer them relief in other ways. This is sort of breaking news. We're just hearing about it now, even though this is a couple of years old that the Biden administration was doing this.
So the Biden administration is still having deleterious effects on America and racist effects on America, even after Joe Biden has left office and headed off to the beach?
Well, and that's one of the things that we hope the Trump administration and Doge and its efforts is going to uncover as they are able to look back over what was going on during these last years of the Biden administration. This probably isn't the last thing that will be uncovered, but it's definitely one of the most egregious, where not only did they implement this racist program, but then after the courts put a stop to it, rather than complying, they tried to find other ways around, other ways to distribute relief in a discriminatory way.
Okay, and is that relief still being distributed now by the now Trump administration? But you know, not.
Well,
I'm assuming not with the president say so.
Yeah, fortunately, the new administrator of the USDA, Brooke Rollins, she has come in now. She's been confirmed by the Senate, and she has put a stop to any sort of racially based distribution. And she's looking over the records to see what has been done, trying to uncover what exactly happened there during the last days of the Biden administration. Frankly, it looks like it was a bit of a mess, and no one's quite sure who was running the show there. But I think further investigation is needed, and probably Congress should even get involved in looking into what happened over at USDA.
I mean, I guess in one way, Glenn, I can't help but see this a little bit personally. I'm not a farmer, but if you give somebody a loan when they need a loan and the loan actually makes sense to the farmer, what's wrong with just telling all the farmers you've got to pay it back? And if you decide, well, but the farmer can't pay it back, well, then the loan never should have been made. right? And I know we're past that point. They've made the loans, and now they want to give these guys a break of one kind or another. Well, that just becomes a government subsidy, doesn't it? And maybe subsidies are appropriate in this case. But is there a reason to give loan relief to any of the farmers? I realize nobody's going to complain if you put money in their pocket or pay off some money that they owe. But did these loans make sense in the first place, you know, for anybody, no matter what color they were?
Yeah, and you're raising important questions of personal responsibility that we're seeing in some of the student loan forgiveness efforts that happened. Now here, at least the cover story, so to speak, was that farmers were hit exceptionally hard by COVID. And I think there may have been a good reason to provide some assistance to farmers there. But the way that the program was implemented, it had nothing to do with need. You didn't have to show that any sort of harm from COVID. You didn't have to show any economic need. The only criterion that the Biden administration was looking at is, did you qualify under the right race? Meaning any race other than white. And if so
Glenn, just to hammer home that point, I'm sure my audience gets it, but I'm a little slow on the uptake. You could literally have a prosperous black farmer for whom the pandemic wasn't as, you know, and the shutdowns and all that. He might have come through it thinking, I'm doing better than ever. I mean, there were some businesses that came out of the pandemic saying, no, we did massive business during the pandemic. And you can have another farmer who was white, who was really hit hard by the effects of the pandemic and the government shutdowns, who's thinking, that guy's getting relief and I'm not, and he's the guy who came out of this smelling like a rose, and I'm the one who came out smelling like cow manure, and you could have that kind of result. But we'll never know, because we don't, I mean, other than knowing the race, we don't know who the relief's going to.
That is exactly the program that was being put in place by the Biden administration. The only thing it looked at was race. Any farmer who was of a minority race was presumed to be in need and to be disadvantaged, and was offered the benefit of this loan forgiveness. All white farmers, every single one, was assumed to not be in need under this program and was excluded entirely from it.
Okay, so maybe Brooke Rollins can dig into this thing, but at this point, the money is or isn't going out the door, do we know? Or the relief, the forgiveness, is or isn't going out the door?
There's a little more to look into. I think right now it is not going out the door. The question is going to be what happened during the last couple of years of the Biden administration after Pacific Legal Foundation and other similar organizations got the federal courts to enjoin USDA from distributing these funds in a discriminatory way. That's when at least the whistleblower is telling us they went and tried to find some backdoor ways to still distribute relief. I think that is not happening now, but I think it needs to be looked into to see what did happen after we got these court orders, and then the Biden administration, again, according to a USDA whistleblower, found these other ways to distribute relief.
Unbelievable. Glenn Roper from the Pacific Legal Foundation. Glenn, thanks very much. Hey, if something were to happen tomorrow, are you ready for it? A new virus or a shortage or a supply chain collapse. Whatever it is, your health can't wait. And that's why I want to tell you about All Family Pharmacy. It's a pharmacy that puts you first. They're on a mission to make America healthy again, helping families like yours stay stocked up and ready with the medications they need close at hand. They're not just selling medication. They're standing up for medical freedom and making sure Americans have access to the treatments they choose. While others block access, All Family Pharmacy makes them available. They've got ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, methylene blue, mebendazole, antibiotics, even your everyday meds. Over 200 meds are available. And no insurance, no hassle. Just go online, work with a licensed doctor. That gets the prescription. The meds ship right to your door. If you'd rather be stocked up than caught off guard, this one's for you. Go to allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars and use code Lars10. That's LARS10 to get 10% off. That's allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars and use code Lars10. Take control of your health and stay prepared. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. new plan of action. Just mug all the Dems.
I got jumped like 5 weeks ago walking home in New York City. And when I woke up, I genuinely felt like a different person. Because I was on the floor, I was bleeding, I was concussed, and I was 100% Republican.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And in a moment, I want to tell you this story about a pregnant mother who unfortunately has been declared brain dead, has been kept on life support in Georgia. Should the state step in to protect the unborn baby or leave the decision to the grieving families? We'll get to the details of that in just a moment. Our poll on X today, should North Carolina have to redo an election when they found 200,000 faulty voter registrations? Well, now the Justice Department has sued North Carolina, saying you've got to straighten this thing out. And it probably means that they're going to have to recast the election. The lawsuit claims the state board failed to collect the required driver's license or social security numbers from about 200,000 voter registrations. That violates federal law, the law known as the Help America Vote Act, HAVA. The suit follows earlier GOP challenges over clerical errors that left ID fields blank, and it disputes the state board's current plan to update the records at polling places. They're looking for a court order that would require officials in North Carolina to reach out to the voters with the incomplete records within 30 days. And if they don't do that, then the election has to be done over again. Let me go to a second naysayer this hour. I'm rarely this lucky. Joe, welcome to the program. We love naysayers, so thanks for the call. What do you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer? Joe?
Hello?
Hello, Joe.
Okay, you got me. All right. Hey, so I'm on speaker. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're not supposed to be on speakerphone because it makes it sound like you're talking from Mars. But what's on your mind, and what do you we're wasting a lot of time. But what do you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer?
Well, on the safety of water cooled, pressurized nuclear generation facilities,
it's got a great safety record, don't you know?
So this is where I think probably. You've kind of got your chin hanging over your toes, my sir, my friend.
My chin always hangs over my toes. Actually, I got the belly out of the way a long time ago. But Joe, I don't know what you mean. The electric generating nuclear industry has one of the best safety records in the world. And by the way, they would probably not use pressurized water nuclear reactors. Those are old school from 50 years ago. The newer designs from NuScale and others do not use that. But say we were to use that technology. There hasn't been a single death in civilian nuclear electric power in America's history. Not one.
Oh, my gosh. Sure. So let me go ahead and recount the facts, if you don't mind.
Well, go for it.
Starting out with, Jane Fonda saying the China syndrome.
Well-known nuclear expert, Jane Fonda, yeah.
Well, yeah, so she did not get her core melting into the ground scenario at the New York incident.
New York. You mean Three Mile Island?
Yeah, the New York. Was that New York?
No, it was not.
So anyhow, that's Three Mile Island.
Who cares about the details?
Because the second thing is, then we had Chernobyl, where that did result in the release of a lot.
It did. And do you know how many of those, do you know how many plants in America run on the Chernobyl graphite core design? Zero.
So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to build a record, and bring the record up to date. Because every time we have these conversations, the pro-nuke versus the anti-nuke keeps getting proven correctly.
Okay, can you tell me what they've been correct about? Tell me what they've been correct about so far. By the way, Three Mile Island, in case you care about it, is Pennsylvania. But
as I'm doing, yes. Okay. So you have the actual relation radiation from Chernobyl and the actual cause of thousands of people of death due to leukemia and such.
You do understand that you want to bring up Chernobyl, but Chernobyl was designed by a failed government that doesn't exist anymore with a design that is not used in America at all.
I'm building the track record.
Okay. Of
what? Anti-nuke and the pro-nuke. The anti-nuke were proved wrong. We're proven right with Three Mile Island. More so with Chernobyl.
No, because, Joe, hold on, Joe.
Well, because
Joe, can I point something out to you? In Three Mile Island, the safety systems worked. Now, did they get the kind of result they wanted? No. One of the two units had to shut down. Do you know what they're doing with the other unit? the high-tech folks have decided to take the second unit at Three Mile Island and restart it and generate power from it, even though it's decades old.
Okay.
So isn't that a good record of success?
So the thousands of people that were killed because of the nuclear power plant that blew up in Russia, and then we had the three that blew up spectacularly about 11, 12 years ago in Japan.
There was one plant that melted down because there were three there. One of them had a meltdown because the cooling water didn't continue because, Joe, they put the backup power for a seaside nuclear.
Anyhow,
I'm not even going to take part in this anymore. Let me just finish that thought, though. Fukushima was a plant that had to have electricity to operate the pumps. Ordinarily, the electricity came from the nuclear power plant. But they knew that if the nuclear plant had to shut down, they would need backup power. So these brilliant folks in Japan decided, where should we put the backup generator? They put it in the basement of the plant that is sitting right next to the ocean, knowing that if a tsunami comes in, the basement is going to fill up with water and the diesel generators are going to fail. And they did. Sadly, so. Let's go to JW in Alabama. Hey, JW, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hello, my southern brother. Greetings from Lower Alabama, the regional Garden of Eden. I got a couple of points I want to push at you real quick, and I'm going to get out of your way.
Go for it.
Harvard, number one, and then the Farmers, number two. Look, I'm so tired of seeing Americans that try to do right, play by the rules, and do right and live right, act right when the house is right. Have to take second base and have to take second dance to the rest of the world and all these other programs and stuff. Like in Harvard, we got people want to go to school there. They can't get in there for the people from other countries in there. And then they don't want to act right when they get in there. They want to keep Jewish people out and all this stuff. Now I'm going to move along. We're going to tie this all together with Americans being abused.
Please do.
The farmer, which I am a brother farmer down here, if anybody gets that money, if anybody gets a handout or a helping hand or whatever you want to call it, it should be our American farmers. We need to grow here, feed here, and run our business if responsible. You know, it's just, look here, when you complain about the American farmer, don't do it with your mouth full, Lars. That's all I need to say.
No, and you know what? I don't complain about farmers. I love to eat. And you're right. If they want to give some relief, give it to the farmers who need it and pay no attention to what color they are or how old they are, just give it to the farmers who need the help, not based on skin color. JW, thanks for the call. Hey, just in, Planned Parenthood CEO made about $1 million last year, and part of that was your tax money. You know, running the organization that kills almost 500,000 babies every year, and to make even more discussion, tax dollars were used in it as well. Planned Parenthood is big abortion business profiting off baby killing. They have to stop Planned Parenthood, and I've got the team to make it happen. Join me in supporting Americans United for Life. Since their beginnings in 1970, AUL has been involved in every pro-life case in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. And their top-tier lawyers, they're dedicated to defending life and protecting the unborn. AUL played a critical role in the legal strategy that contributed to the overturning of Roe, and now they're focused on exposing Planned Parenthood. I'm looking for 50 pro-life listeners to donate $50 a month to stop the madness. Your tax-deductible donation saves babies. Donate securely at AUL.org/Lars. That's AUL.org/Lars. We mentioned that Donald Trump is cutting off the funding for a lot of Harvard's enterprises. He's going to even try to cancel some of the contracts or grant agreements that have already been laid out. So I thought we'd get the lowdown on this from Jay Green, who is a senior research fellow in the Heritage Foundation Center for Education Policy. Jay, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
So is Trump right to cut the funding to enterprises like Harvard that don't seem to need the money anyway, since they're sitting on tens of billions of dollars in their endowments?
Well, look, that's an excellent point, too, that there is something very strange about working class Americans paying taxes to subsidize an incredibly rich university with highly paid staff, largely educating wealthy students. There is some very reverse Robin Hood quality to that. That's for sure. But that is not the stated objective of the Trump administration. They say, and I believe that they are correct, in being concerned about the extent to which Harvard and other institutions have violated civil rights. So a condition of receiving federal money is that you have to abide by certain laws and regulations, including the Civil Rights Act, and particularly yep. Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. And it's pretty clear that Harvard and other institutions have violated the Civil Rights Act with respect to Jews, but as well with respect to whites and Asians. So there's a racial component as well. But I think the thing that's been getting the most attention recently is with respect to Jews.
Well, of course, but Jay, you bring up an important point. That is, when an institution like Harvard says, hey, those scores would get you in if you were black or Hispanic, but you're white, so those scores will not get you in. I mean, it was just about that simple, wasn't it? I mean, they didn't actually say that out loud, but that was the effect of their policies. The same scores that would get a black or Hispanic student into Harvard or the other major Ivy Leagues would not get a white student in the door, right?
This is what the Supreme Court found in Students for Fair Admission, a case decided last year, and they ordered Harvard and other institutions to discontinue their use of race in admissions decisions. And it's pretty clear that Harvard is not truly abiding by that decision and is seeking ways to circumvent it. And look, this is a little bit, I mean, it's not as catastrophic, but it's a little bit like, you know, Central High School in Little Rock, where, you know, the Supreme Court says you have to integrate. And then the high school says, no, yep. we're not going to. And then what happened was Eisenhower brought in the 101st Airborne and made them desegregate. And effectively, that's what Trump is doing now. He's bringing in the 101st Airborne against Harvard. But he's not bringing in troops. He's just cutting their money. And frankly, that money is conditioned on their compliance with civil rights laws, and they are failing to satisfy those conditions.
And then why not just cut them off? I mean, that seems to make sense to me before you even get to the question of their $50 million or $50 billion endowment.
So I think Trump has been attempting to negotiate with them to reach an agreement. And each time they object and resist making an agreement, then Harvard is upping the ante by cutting something else. In truth, he can cut everything. In fact, he could discontinue access to subsidized student loans for all the students. I mean, there are many steps left up this ladder that Trump could take. And in the end, Harvard is going to lose. They may see themselves as champions of the resistance, but they are first in the wrong substantively, but second, they do not have the resources to outmatch the federal government. And you may think that's unfair, but it's true. And so they're going to lose. I think they may recognize they're going to lose. They're simply looking for a way to improve the agreement they're ultimately going to have to reach by positioning themselves through litigation. But in the end, I think Trump is going to prevail here, and the money will get restored to Harvard. Now, we could separately argue about whether that's a good thing or not, but at least some of this money is going to be restored.
Well, let me ask you about a thornier issue, Jay. I'm talking to Jay Green from the Center for Education Policy. So you've got Chinese students, Chinese nationals in particular, who come in, go to schools like Harvard. There are hundreds of millions of dollars worth of government research, maybe energy research and other research that's very important and very secretive. And you put these students in these universities, they're under an obligation from the government that gave them permission to come here, not the United States, but the government of China, that said you can go to school at Harvard. But you're under an obligation as a Chinese national to tell us anything you find and anything we want to know. Is there any real sensible way to resolve that kind of problem, that China is allowed to put spies right where some of our top research is being done, and then they are obligated as Chinese nationals to bring it back?
It's an enormous problem, and it's unclear what the solutions are. There's a report out of Stanford that every single Chinese graduate student at Stanford has a minder in the Chinese security apparatus. Wow. Who meets with them or contacts them to debrief them on the work they're doing, so that Chinese officials can learn about the cutting edge research and intellectual property innovations that are being made at our highest level universities. And it's an enormous problem. They're also spying on each other. So they're, you know, some people say, well, if we bring in Chinese students, then we can export democracy maybe back to China. But the Chinese are worried about that, with reason, and so they that one of the things they have Chinese students do is spy on the other Chinese students to make sure that they're not doing things to undercut the communist regime back home.
Unbelievable. Jay Green. Jay, thank you very much. Senior Research Fellow at the Heritage Foundation Center for Education Policy. We appreciate the time, Jay. Hey, this doesn't happen very often, so you want to jump on it right quick. Brickhouse Nutrition's Memorial Day sale, it's on. For a limited time, save 25% off everything with my code Memorial25. That includes Lean, the weight loss supplement that targets the same goals as those GLP-1 injections, but without the needles or prescriptions. And people are seeing real results. They love that it curbs your appetite and cravings. Check out the website reviews. Also on sale, Field of Greens, the super fruit and vegetable drink that literally promises your doctor will see the improvement in your health or your money is back. Whether it's collagen, creatine, or any other doctor-formulated products, it's all on sale, 25% off. Kick off a healthy summer and save big while you're at it. Go to BrickHouseNutrition.com and use code Memorial25 for 25% off. But don't wait. The sale's only on for a few days. That's BrickHouseNutrition.com. BrickHouseNutrition.com. And be sure to use code Memorial25 for 25% off. Glad to be with you on the Lars Larson Show. If you want to jump into what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here at 866-HEY-LARS. And naysayers go to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Podcast, download, or stream it, and always tell Alexa to play the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by, playback.
And now,
Lars. Real Red Meat Radio.
I mean, that's a special kind of stupid.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly, provocative talk radio.
What I say is what I say. And honestly, if you don't like it, I'm sorry.
Lars.
Oh, boys, I'm back!
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Now, here's your host.
Wait a minute, I'm talking now, if you don't mind, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. Let me invite you to Honestly Provocative Talk Radio and the best conversation in talk journalism. If you want to jump in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. And we have to talk about El Chapo here in just a moment and a deal that was cut apparently with the approval of the Trump administration. And as I've always told you, when I disagree with President Trump or things his administration does, and it does happen, I've had people say, well, you never disagree with him. Yes, I do. And in fact, I told people back in 2016, just after he had announced for president a few months earlier, when I decided to endorse him, I said, but I will always reserve the right that when I disagree with him, I'm going to say so to my audience. And I'm glad to do that. Anyway, if you want to jump in, it's 866-439-5277. If you happen to be a naysayer, why, we've always put naysayers to the head of the line. You just have to have your facts together and tell me what we disagree about. And then let me ask a few questions in aid of an objection. You can also send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You can also find our X-Poll. The question every day, and we have a fresh question every day, is made up from the news of the day. The Justice Department is now suing North Carolina. Why? Because North Carolina found that it had 200,000 faulty voter registrations. So should North Carolina have to redo an election that was impacted by those 200,000 faulty voter registrations? I would answer yes to that one. You can answer it any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, and always brought to you by AMAC. I've been a member of the group for almost a decade now, the Association of Mature American Citizens. I mean, AMAC has the conservative values I believe in, so I join. You should join, too. Just go to amac.us or call 888-262-2006. AMAC is better for you and better for America. Now, yesterday, I told you that Donald Trump says he is considering taking away $3 billion of grants that would have been awarded to Harvard University and use them to fund trade schools across America instead. Would that be a good idea? I said yes. 93% of you said yes to that idea as well. Only a small 7% of you said no to that idea. I think it's going to be very attractive, especially when you consider the size of the endowment that Harvard is sitting on. Harvard earns about $5 billion a year on its endowment alone. I mean, they could sit back and never get another dime from an alumni of the university, and they would make $5 billion a year. Do they need a single dime of your taxpayer money? I'd answer no to that one. In any case, glad to have you with me and always glad to take your calls. A shout out to Upper Arlington, Ohio. You can catch great talk radio on WTOH. That's FM 98.9. And you can catch my show there Monday through Friday. Coming up this hour, America's colleges are loaded with debt and radical politics instead of real world skills. At least their students are. Are they putting the country's future in real jeopardy? Should foreign elites like those within the Chinese Communist Party and the European Union who silence America's online still get their passports stamped by us? Blue states want rainbow flags in every classroom. Texas will soon have the Ten Commandments in every classroom. And take a moment to cast a vote in that X poll. You'll find it at Lars Larson Show. Now, let me talk to you about El Chapo. El Chapo actually translates, believe it or not, Shorty. Shorty Guzman, the notorious drug cartel leader. And he's up for the death penalty, except they've cut a deal. And this is what the deal consists of, and I'm not happy with it. Federal prosecutors say they will not seek the death penalty for the son of the notorious Mexican drug kingpin, El Chapo, if he is convicted on multiple charges in Chicago. The U.S. attorney filed a notice on Friday, said he would not seek the death penalty against Joaquin Guzman Lopez. However, they didn't offer any explanation of how that came about. But it sounds as though this is what the deal is. Mexican officials confirmed that about 2 weeks ago, on the 14th of May, 17 family members of the drug cartel leaders, including family members of El Chapo Guzman, crossed into the United States legally as part of a deal between the son of the former head of the Sinaloa cartel and the Trump administration. So the people got a guilty finding in the case of Joaquin Guzman Lopez, and they got a deal when it came to El Chapo, but the Guzman or Chapo, Guzman family got something out of it as well. So you have to consider whether or not that was a good deal. It doesn't smell right to me, but El Chapo had smuggled mountains of cocaine and other drugs into the United States for about a quarter of a century. He was convicted about 6 years ago on multiple conspiracy counts, sentenced to life in prison. His son was looking at the death penalty, and now he is going to be spared the death penalty. And the Democrats want us to believe that the border crisis is not costing American lives. Consider what we just found out about a terrible situation in northern Texas. There was a young lady, Ava Moore. Ava Moore was a bright young lady. She had already been accepted for admittance to the Air Force Academy. That is quite an accomplishment, getting into any of the service academies. She was killed. She was hit by a jet ski. And who was operating the jet ski? A couple of one illegal alien in particular, Dykerlin Alejandra Gonzalez Gonzalez. They tried to flee from the scene, but they hit her with a jet ski while she was out kayaking. 18 years old. She died on that lake on Sunday night. And they caught up to the bad guys, both of them Venezuelans, both of them in the country illegally. And this is the situation we're up against. If the Democrats try to tell you that there are not American lives being lost because of these crazy policies, they're lying, because the proof is right there in front of you. To your calls. Let's start with Dan. Hey, Dan, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I want to talk about this nuclear power thing.
Good.
The United States Navy has never had an accident with one of its nuclear submarines related to the reactor. So nuclear power is safe.
It is, especially if we take all the lessons learned from the nuclear Navy, which includes not just subs, but aircraft carriers as well. Couple that with all the things we've learned about nuclear power in the civilian world. Dan, I'm always stunned when people call the show, as a gentleman did a little while ago, and suggested that, well, we can't believe in nuclear power because of Chernobyl and Fukushima and Jane Fonda's movie, The China Syndrome. You know, when the opponents of nuclear power have to start talking about a nuclear plant badly designed by a Soviet Union that doesn't exist anymore, or Fukushima badly designed by Japan and would not have failed if they hadn't put the backup power underwater. If all of those things have been done the way the American nuclear industry has been, it is still the truth that there hasn't been a single death in any commercial electric nuclear power plant anywhere in America, and that is a darn good safety record. Coming up, Texas lawmakers just passed a bill that could force every public school classroom to put the Ten Commandments on display. Does that cross any lines? We'll talk about it coming up next on the Lars Larson Show.
Sometimes the truth is awkward.
You know what the Muslims call the Jews in the Quran? The children of Israel. Well, this is awkward.
Now, more truth from Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Let's talk about the Ten Commandments. I think it's a capital idea to put it in every single classroom in America. Unfortunately, I'm only getting my wish for one state at this point, and that's the state of Texas, because they have now passed a law in Texas. It passed their Senate by 28-3, despite a federal court ruling that a similar but not the same, Louisiana law violated the constitutionally required separation of church and state. Now, that's from Texas Tribune, except the separation of church and state is an idea in a letter that Jefferson wrote to a bunch of ministers. It's not in the Constitution. Sean Carney joins me now, who's CEO and president of 40 Days for Life. Hey, Sean, welcome back.
Good to be back. Thanks for having me.
What do you think of the idea of having public schools in a state post the Ten Commandments in every classroom? I can't say anything not to like about it.
Yeah, it's really common sense. It's not really that outrageous of a point or controversial. We're doing it in Texas. I'm a proud Texan. It passed with bipartisan support. There were 20 Democrats that voted for it. It is going to be signed into law. I'm sure it'll be challenged legally. But, you know, Arkansas did it. Louisiana did it. Now Texas is doing it. And, you know, as a simple FYI, the Ten Commandments are good. And throughout the history of the world, about 99% of people, whether they believed in God or were Jewish or Christian, they tried to follow and live the Ten Commandments. So there are no cultures promoting, adultery, stealing, and killing.
No, they're not. And I know that some of them are some people are going to take issue with a few of the commandments, although the one about honoring your father and your mother, I think that was perfectly legitimate. Bring no other gods before me. Well, OK, I could see where that applies to the Christian faith, my faith and your faith, I believe, as well, Sean. But why are they so against this? Because I've seen schools around America over the years. We've talked about schools in California that push kids to learn the five pillars of Islam and other schools elsewhere that push other stuff. This doesn't seem like anything that's bad for kids at all, nor do I think does it cross the line and establish an official government religion simply by saying you've got to have the Ten Commandments on the wall.
And you can learn about a religion and learn from it and just not believe it. Jews don't believe Jesus Christ was the Messiah. We do. So we don't believe that, the Old Testament is all there is right now. So, that's fine. But there is so much richness. And by the way, God in school, Ten Commandments in school, prayer in school, removing all those hasn't worked. We didn't have school shootings in the 1950s. Now we have at least one per year. And, it's not working. And so giving kids, it would be in every classroom, something to look at and to live by and to know, the history of. Moses is in the U.S. Capitol, by the way. Nobody has a fit over that.
And the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court, all that bas-relief. We have religious figures that are in bas-relief on the inside walls of the Supreme Court, don't we?
Yes. And it's a great point. If we just want this ongoing sort of religion is awful and it's from the Middle Ages and we need to move forward, that hasn't worked. And the left has bombed the last 5 years at just forfeiting any credibility because of, what went on in 2020 with the government mandates, redefining marriage, promoting and celebrating abortion at 40 weeks, denying that there are only two genders. So now when they raise their hand and kind of go back in time and say, actually, now we're mad because it's separation of church and state, which Jefferson wanted to protect the church, by the way, everybody's
from the government,
from the government,
by the way.
He didn't say, needed during Biden.
Well, he didn't say that somebody of faith could not be a member of the government. In fact, I keep reminding people that all these Christians who were the founders of the United States, who were Christians, and they could have, I've always said, gone, and tell me if you think I'm wrong about this. At the time, given the population of the 13 colonies, do you think if they'd said, when we have a new country, we're going to say that to be able to vote or run for public office, you must be at least a person of faith, maybe even Christians. And they could have put that in. Instead, they put in a specific prohibition on any religious test for office. So, in theory, an atheist could run for president. And in fact, I think some of them actually are atheists by practice, but that's a subject for another day. But if the founders could have said, let's make sure everybody who runs our government, and if you want to vote and own land, you got to be a Christian. They didn't do that. They did the opposite. They said, it's all welcome. You can have faith. You don't have, the government is not going to force you to practice a particular religion, because they had the experience of a lot of people who'd come to North America, what was then North America and not a country yet, who were fleeing from governments that told them you have to follow this religion or that religion. This is not that. It's just something for kids to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. And primarily they were coming from England, which was a disaster when King Henry VIII made himself, Pope and president. So, they're coming from that. It was to protect people of faith. It was to protect the church from the government. And they didn't do that in Germany. And it was just such a mess. And, the Ten Commandments, this is what's so odd, is the left is attacking that which is good. Women in sports is good, not playing against dudes. Heartbeats of unborn children, those are good. The Ten Commandments are good. and they're just good. And so, the whole idea of removing all this, by the way, another proof that Texas has only gotten redder with people moving here from California, this was bipartisan, very popular, it's going to pass, and it's a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic thing. And what I keep wondering, Sean, is does the Democrat Party realize that they've formed kind of a collective suicide pact? They've said, we're going to be against all those good things that Sean just mentioned. And by the way, when people say, well, what do you stand up for? Well, we stand up for Kilmer Abrego Garcia of El Salvador. And we stand up for George Floyd, and we stand up and you say, hold on. You're the party that is against all the good stuff, for all the bad stuff, and you want us to vote for you? How do you suppose that's going to play out with the voters?
They're going to lose in 2026. I firmly believe that. They have not learned a lesson, very similar, by the way, to Republicans in 2012 by running Romney. They didn't learn a lesson.
Oh my God.
And they are digging in on these cultural fronts that just their own people went to Trump. Their own people voted for, Republicans, and they haven't gotten the message. And now we're attacking Moses and the Ten Commandments. This is what we're left with, this like stupid esoteric thing that, that started 50 years ago to get prayer out of school. So we also have a much better Supreme Court. So I think they're fighting a losing battle.
Yeah, it is. And, Sean, I'm not an educator by profession, although maybe people do learn something from the show. But how could you possibly teach the history of this country without talking about religion, and in particular about the Christian faith, which drove, as you just pointed out, so many people to leave Europe, in particular England, flee from religious persecution and come to a place where anybody can practice whatever faith they choose or no faith at all. That's Sean Carney from 40 Days for Life. Sean, thank you very much. Hey, if something were to happen tomorrow, are you ready for it? A new virus or maybe a shortage, a supply chain collapse, whatever it is, your health can't wait. And that's exactly why I want to tell you about All Family Pharmacy. It's a pharmacy that puts you first. They're on a mission to make America healthy again by helping families just like yours stay stocked up and ready with the medications they need close at hand. They're not just selling medication. They're standing up for medical freedom and making sure Americans have access to the treatments they choose. While others block access, All Family Pharmacy makes it available. They've got ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, methylene blue, mebendazole, antibiotics, even your everyday medications, over 200 medications available. And it's easy. No insurance, no hassle. Go online, work with a licensed doctor who handles the prescription. The meds ship right to your door. If you'd rather be stocked up than caught off guard, this is for you. Go to allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars and use code Lars10 to get 10% off your order. That's allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars and use code Lars10 for 10% off. Take control of your health and stay prepared. Glad to be with you on a Wednesday. Always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Coming up, foreign powers are trying to censor American speech and attacking our rights overseas. We'll get to that in your calls next.
The Lars Larson Show. Welcome to Honestly Provocative Talk, but fair warning, if you're listening to this show, you're likely on the FBI's most wanted list. Welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I want to get to your phone calls and emails. I'm kind of curious what this naysayer has to say. Greg, you know that we love naysayers on this program, so thank you for calling. What do you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer? And welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Well, thanks, Lars. I appreciate it. First off, I want to disclose that I'm of the Jewish faith. It's my opinion, and I've been taught that the Ten Commandments were given to the Jewish people. And we know that by reading the first one in its entirety. It says, I am the Lord God who brought you out of Egypt. That does not apply to the Gentiles. Now, I would also ask, which version of the Ten Commandments is the law actually invoking to be displayed in these schools? Because there's several versions.
I don't know the details from Texas, whether which version of the Ten Commandments, but it sounds like you'd be in favor of having those posted, would you not?
Well, not necessarily, because I don't think that they apply to the Gentile people. I think they only apply to the Jewish people. What I would be
my read of the Bible says that I understand I'm going to refer to Jesus, and you don't think that he's the Messiah, but he says this applies to all Gentiles and Jews alike. Correct?
Well,
I'm sure you've read more than the first five books, right? I'm just saying.
I know this,
you should finish the book, Greg. It's a great book. It's the greatest book. No, it's the greatest book that's ever existed. And I have the advantage of having read all the chapters, and you've missed out on some of them. So I wanted to bring you along.
Well, no, that's fine. And if from the Christian faith that you want to take that tact or take that approach, you're more than welcome to do so.
Well, does the rest of the book say that this word is not just for one group of people, it is for all, and it specifically mentions Gentiles, although I have to admit, I don't know Hebrew, so I haven't read it in Hebrew, but there are some individual words that I go back and look at, because depending on which version of the Bible, I don't particularly like the King James Version, because it has some really ugly connections in history. I prefer the Geneva Bible, but that was written out of original source documents back in 1550 or so. So, but do you object to having the Ten Commandments posted in schools? And would that be bad for kids? And would it be an example of the government establishing a religion by having the Ten Commandments posted on the wall?
Well, let's just say that you were a Hindu kid, for example, or a Muslim kid, for example. I don't think that those commandments would indeed imply to those particular groups. What I would suggest.
But
however,
but hold on, Greg. You said it wouldn't apply. I get that. Is it the government forcing a single religion on those other kids or anybody else in the community by saying, let's have them on the wall?
Well, again, I think that depends on what version is actually posted on the wall. If you want to go with the Hebrew version and use the exact Hebrew translation, I do not think it would be a good idea. If you want to use a more lucid translation or a more liberal translation, well, I'd have to see what it is before I would make that.
Well, neither one of them is going to apply to the Muslims, is it?
I would not think so, especially if it's the God that delivered you from Egypt. That certainly wouldn't apply to the Muslims.
But Greg, I don't know about you, but when I see something posted that doesn't apply to me, I don't pay it any never mind. Do you? I mean, I see things posted on walls, in buildings. I see things posted on social media that doesn't apply to me, and I don't pay it much attention. What's wrong with that?
Well, no, you know what? That's fair. I can't argue that. I think that's moving the goalposts a little bit.
Because I ask you the first not moving the goalpost question, which is the Constitution forbids the government from establishing a religion and saying, this is the religion you must believe in, the way kings of England did for so long. And I don't think that this is the government doing that. I think this is the government in Texas saying we want to see the Ten Commandments on the wall. I suppose if some of the Muslim families who live in Texas, if they want to go down to the school and say, hey, would you mind posting the five pillars of Islam too? Okay, throw that on the wall as well.
Oh, well, okay. So you're just saying it's something to post that people can either accept or not accept as they choose. It's not any kind of doctrine that's going to be taught to anybody. Is that
well? If you read the rest of the chapters, Greg, you'd see that you've got to come to it voluntarily. I mean, Islam may come out and get slammed on your head, which it does, and it has been ever since the beginning. Because you might recall that Muhammad tried to talk people into his religion and they weren't interested. So then he said, I'll just conquer you and force it on you. And in Sharia law countries, Islam is forced on people. Christianity is not.
I understand, and that's a good point. That's a valid point. As one of the reasons I specifically stayed away from invoking Muslim, and I used Hindu. We could also use the Japanese Shinto. There's obviously a lot of different religions that do not look up to the same deity that brought the B'nai Israel, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. So that the first commandment's the one that's the most troublesome for me.
But you're not saying that Judaism owns the Ten Commandments and that somehow Christians are culturally misappropriating from you, are you?
You know, I could probably make a case for that. I mean, they were actually delivered to
could.
The people from Moses as they came out of Egypt, as they were wandering in the desert. They weren't delivered to anybody else.
I understand what you're saying. And I think you're missing out by not getting into all the other chapters. You've got 61 other chapters you could read, right?
I suppose you're talking about in the New Testament?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not.
You're missing out, buddy.
I think
you're missing the best part.
I've heard that before, and I'm going to beg to respectfully differ, but, you know, I respect your view.
Now, hold on, Greg. Tell me the truth. Have you ever read Beyond the Torah?
I won't say that I'm any kind of an expert. I certainly have.
No, I just want to know if you have. Or is it?
Yeah,
or would that violate your religious faith to read some of the other more interesting and better chapters?
I've indeed read some of the chapters, especially the Gospels, the four Gospels. I've certainly read those.
How broad-minded of you. That's tremendous. You are a very broad-minded individual. And so, Greg, I appreciate a good naysayer almost any day of the week, and I appreciate your call. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ars.
And check out those other books. I mean, they're very, very good. Thank you so much for the call. Hey, by the way, I got to tell you about Planned Parenthood. I don't like Planned Parenthood. And Planned Parenthood CEO compensation, almost $1 million last year. Now, Planned Parenthood is that organization that kills almost 500,000 babies a year. And to make you even more disgusted, that $1 million to the CEO, our tax dollars help fund that. Planned Parenthood is big abortion business that profits off baby killing. We got to stop Planned Parenthood. And I've got the team to make it happen. Join me in supporting Americans United for Life. Since their beginning in 1970, AUL has been involved in every pro-life case presented before the Supreme Court. Their top-tier lawyers are dedicated to defending life and protecting the unborn. AUL played a crucial role in the legal strategy that contributed to overturning Roe, and now they're focused on exposing Planned Parenthood and closing abortion centers for good. Americans United for Life has helped save more than 3 million kids. They are leading the charge in the post-Roe era. I'm looking for 50 pro-life listeners who will donate $50 a month to stop the madness. Your tax-deductible donation saves babies' lives. Your help is crucial. Donate securely at aul.org/Lars. That's aul.org/Lars. Americans United for Life.
What does Lars think about smoking the devil's lettuce?
I won't go schizo, will I?
It's a distinct possibility.
Now it's time to take a hit of Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll get back to your phone calls and emails. But first, I want to talk to Dr. Isaiah Henkel, who is CEO of Overqualified.com and a best-selling author. Doctor, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Lars.
So you believe in a standard that I believe the same for higher education in America, that the system is busted. It doesn't lead to prosperity for many of the people, too many of the people who go into it and pay gigantic amounts of money to get a degree. What should we do to fix that situation?
It's a good question. Well, I think you have to start a little bit in the theoretical, or at least in terms of how they're prioritizing their values. For a long time, they've been prioritizing things such as a bit more virtue signaling, doing things that I think teach students to try to have the most need rather than teaching them the most in-demand skills. And so if you replace logic and reason with trying to look like you need the most help, this is not compatible with the job market. And I know that might be a little bit out there in terms of theory, but that's the core problem.
No, I like the idea, Doctor.
Thank you. Well, I was just going to say, practically what these universities need to do is they need to start teaching in-demand skills again. They got to start teaching logic, reason. You know, that math isn't racist. That's the starting point.
Well, and is it possible, because I don't like the government being involved in education either, but it's way too involved. But if you were to start saying to kids, why don't you go study something that leads to a job where there's a profession that has space for you? You know, don't go after degrees that don't lead to some kind of work, unless you happen to be independently wealthy. And I would guess the vast majority of students are not independently wealthy or come from wealthy families. In that case, study something that's in demand. And I think there's a way you could do it if you decide the government is still going to be involved in making student loans. Don't make stupid loans for student loans for stupid things. If I went to a bank and said, I want to open a new donut shop, and they said, where are you going to put it? I said, I'm going to put it on the corner of this intersection. They said, Lars, there are three donut shops on that corner already. The fourth one is not going to do that well. They would say, we're not making the loan to you. Can't the lending authorities, whether they're private or government, say the same thing? We've got too many people with DEI degrees and degrees that end in the word studies. You can have a degree, but you need to go after something where there's actually a job at the other end.
You bring up a fantastic point. Check the incentives, right? So first of all, these universities need to be incentivized. Like, they should only get any level of federal funding or taxpayer funding based on how many people that they graduate who get into full-time jobs, you know, above a certain salary level that's related to their degree. This has never been done. That would fix the problem almost overnight. And you're right. The students need to take this responsibility on themselves, but also for financing. What are they taking these classes for? Why do the classes exist? Those classes would not exist. Those degrees that end in studies, like you said, would not exist if the incentives were right. And right now, there is no incentive except for these loaning companies to loan out as much money as possible to put, you know, to straddle just astronomical debt on these students. And they're, of course, in cahoots with the universities, too, because the universities, you know, they can charge tuitions like, you know, Harvard, the Ivy League, they're up to $60,000, not just the Ivy League, $60,000 a year. People can't pay that money, so the universities only survive if they can get those students easily, get them federal grants, federal loans. So that's what's propping up the whole system right now. If that goes away, many of these universities will cease to exist. I mean, we're already losing a university in the U.S. every week for the last couple of years. I think it's going to accelerate no matter what, because they can skyrocket tuition up to $100,000 a year, and they probably will. It's still not going to save the core problem, which is the wrong incentives.
Dr. Henkel, would you mind telling our audience what overqualified.com is all about? And then I've got a number of other questions.
Overqualified.com, we help people who have graduated and maybe they worked in a career for a long time. They lost their job. They can't get hired again. You know, right now we see a lot of people who are struggling to, or have really just been replaced by cheaper labor, sometimes on a foreign visa or not, and a combination of AI tools. So we help these people who have advanced degrees that did everything right. They have the experience, but there's this manufactured, quote unquote, overqualified crisis where they're being called overqualified. They're too capable when really they just want to save money and possibly hire a cheaper worker with a combination of AI tools. So we help them overcome that and get hired into great jobs so that they continue to, you know, pass on their knowledge and help people. Because I think and we think that businesses need these people that have these leadership skills at these organizations to pass on their knowledge, not just be, you know, kicked aside after the age of 40, which is happening more and more now.
Well, and are they viewed as overqualified? Because if you give them a job, but you say, but you have vast qualifications, the minute you find a better job, you're going to leave, and that's going to cost the employer.
Yeah, exactly right. And so we train them on how to find an organization or a company that is a good fit for them as well. and where they're going to stay. But you're exactly right. Employers want to avoid that flight risk. And so you have a lot of people that are proving themselves out of a job. Like they're actually trying too hard and they're coming across as too intimidating. And the average age of the hiring manager started to go down. I think the average age is about 30 now. Typical degree would be an associate's or bachelor's degree. So if you have somebody with these indicators that they might be overqualified, you're right. The employer is much more reluctant. So how can we make it a fit for both sides? That's really the goal.
Yeah, and it's sad because, doctor, I've talked to community college instructors. One of them was a welding instructor. He said, my students all go out and find, you know, really good, well-paying jobs the minute they leave my program.
Yeah.
He said, and my program's almost empty. And the program for, I think it's hotel management, and this was a few years ago, he says, that one's chock full. And they're all going to go out to minimum wage jobs for the most part. That's Dr. Isaiah Henkel. He is the CEO of overqualified.com and a best-selling author as well. Dr. Henkel, thank you very much. I appreciate your time, and we'll have you back. Hey, this doesn't happen very often, so you want to jump on it right now. Brickhouse Nutrition's Memorial Day sale is on. For a limited time, save 25% off everything with my code Memorial25. That includes Lean, the one I've tried, the weight loss supplement that targets the same goals as those GLP-1 injections, but without the needles or prescriptions. People are seeing real results, and they love that it curbs their appetite and cravings. Check out the website reviews. Also on sale is Field of Greens, the super fruit and vegetable drink that literally promises your doctor will see the improvement in your health or you get your money back. Whether it's collagen, creatine, or any of their other doctor-formulated products, it's all on sale, 25% off. Kick off a healthy summer and save big while you're at it. Go to BrickHouseNutrition.com and use code Memorial25 for 25% off. But don't wait. The sale's only on for a few days. That's BrickHouseNutrition.com. BrickHouseNutrition.com and use the code Memorial25 for 25% off. Glad to be with you on the Lars Larson Show. If you want to weigh in, email talk@LarsLarson.com. Dial me up at 866-HEY-LARS. You can also send, you can vote in our X poll and tell Alexa to play the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now,
Lars. Real Red Meat Radio.
I mean, that's a special kind of stupid.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk radio.
What I say is what I say. And honestly, if you don't like it, I'm sorry.
Lars.
Oh, boys, I'm back.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Now, here's your host.
Wait a minute. I'm talking now, if you don't mind, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I want to tell you about this. Do not believe the naysayers who say that the Donald Trump tax cut, the one that is currently trying to get through the United States Senate, and at some point we hope will be passed by the Senate the same way it was passed by the House of Representatives, and it includes a lot of things, including some fairly major cuts to Medicaid. And one of the things I wish is that Republicans would stop saying Medicaid is not being cut. Now, remember, Medicaid is insurance for the poor. Medicare is insurance for the older Americans. But Medicaid is being cut, but it's being cut in a good way. And I think to some extent, Republicans, conservatives are reluctant to say, you're right, we're going to make cuts in that program. Let me tell you who we're cutting, and then you tell me if you agree with it or not. Well, I want to go through some of the changes that they're proposing in Medicaid in this bill that will happen, will save a lot of money. And in a lot of ways, the more money you can save by not spending it on deadbeats, and they are deadbeats, the more money will be available for people who are legitimate recipients of Medicaid. First, though, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we're going to put you right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Love it if you vote in my X poll. My crew and I put up a brand new poll question every day. And we put that poll question at Lars Larson Show on X. We also put it on my website at LarsLarson.com. So let me tell you about these Medicaid cuts, because this should have happened a long, long time ago. And if anybody's going to get questions about this, Maybe it shouldn't be Donald Trump and the Republicans today. Maybe it should be asking every previous Republican president and the Democrat presidents as well. Ask Obama and Clinton about this. Why in the world is Medicaid paying for health insurance for a bunch of deadbeats? Now, let me explain what I mean by deadbeats, and I imagine I'll get some naysayer calls about this. There are major ways in which Donald Trump's tax and spending bill is going to change Medicaid. And if you say, well, Lars, you're talking about poor people being deadbeats? No, I'm talking about a package that would trim $700 billion in federal Medicaid over the next 10 years, about $70 billion a year. Now, I realize when we're running about $2 trillion in deficit every year, that is, the government takes in about $4 trillion and it spends more than $6 trillion every year. So we're running up the credit card that all of us owe collectively by about $2 trillion a year. $70 billion is not going to make a big dent in it, but you've got to start somewhere. So how would they actually make changes? The number one change they would do is they would say, if you are illegally in the United States, you can't get Medicaid. Well, hold on. Are we paying for health insurance for people who are illegally in America? Yes. Does federal law allow that? The answer is no. So how are they making that happen if the federal Medicaid program says you can only get Medicaid if you are in America legally? That is, you're a citizen, you're a green card holder, you have a work permit, you qualify for Medicaid. If you are illegally in the country, you don't get Medicaid. Well, an awful lot of the blue states in America decided we want to pay for health insurance for people who are illegally in the country. And they are doing that. And the way they dodge around the federal rules is this. They have a scam going that if you or I did it in the private sector, we would end up in prison for fraud. What those states have done, California is a good example of this. The state will say, we're going to raise taxes on hospitals. So the very same people will tell you all day long that they want to lower the cost of medical care, say, we're going to do that by putting a tax on the hospital. And if you wonder, well, how is a tax on the hospital going to lower the cost of medical care? Here's the way they do it. And it is the sleaziest scheme that I think I've heard of in a long, long time. The state of California slaps a tax on the hospitals, but they tell the hospitals, don't worry. Just pass along all the cost and you will get more Medicaid money back. Then we will take the money that we have taxed out of your pocket, which is Medicaid money, except now we've laundered it through the state government. It's now become just state tax money and we can spend it on anything we want, including covering the health care costs of illegal aliens. You see how that works? So let's say a hospital says we currently have costs of $1,000 and the state comes in and says, we're going to put a tax of 5% on that. And the hospital says, well, then it's going to be $1,050. And the state effectively says, then just go to Medicaid and say the bill isn't $1,000, it's $1,050. You will get more money back from the federal government. Then you will pay it to us. It will become, it will transform itself magically from being Medicaid money to being state level tax money. And then we will give it back to the hospital to provide care for illegal aliens, which we're not allowed to do. When those $50 were Medicaid dollars, we could not spend them on illegal aliens. So that's one group of deadbeats they go after. There is a second big group of deadbeats, though. The federal law has always said that if you want Medicaid, if you are able-bodied and of working age, so I'm not talking about kids under the age of 18, I'm not talking about seniors over retirement age, I'm talking about able-bodied, no disabilities, able-bodied adults of working age. And you say, well, what about that requirement that they have to have even a half-time job, 20 hours a week, 80 hours a month? And you say, well, those states that want to provide some extra Medicaid, they just tell people, you don't have to worry about working a part-time job. You don't have to even try to get a job. We'll give you Medicaid anyway. Well, the Trump plan calls for actually going back to those rules, the rules that are already written into federal law, that if you want to be on Medicaid, you have to either be in school and training for a job or be looking for a job or have a job. And when you're offered a job, you have to work at least half time, 20 hours a week, not asking a lot. And for that, you get Medicaid. That's a second change of that $700 billion that they're going to cut out of Medicaid. The third change, and this one I consider very significant. Over the years, I've had people say, well, if these underage kids are getting transgender hormones and surgery, Who's paying for it? And I've always told those callers and emailers, I've said, well, you are. You're paying for it through Medicaid. Well, how does that work? Well, a kid goes to a school counselor and says, I was born a boy, but I think I'm a girl. Or I was born a girl, and I think I'm a boy. And they say, okay, we'll hook you up with doctors who will give you the hormones that will interrupt your puberty. In other words, they will make you stop growing the way God intended you to grow into an adult female or an adult male. And you say, if the kid says, well, how are we going to pay for that? My mom and dad won't put it on their insurance. No problem, kid. We're going to have Medicaid pay the tab. This change would say that those hormone therapies, puberty blockers, and surgeries for children and for adults would not be paid for with federal Medicaid dollars. So you've solved three problems. You get the deadbeats off the couch and they have to get a part-time job. That's number one. Number two, the illegal alien border hopper does not get Medicaid. And the doctor who's doing mutilation of small children no longer gets a check from Medicaid to get the job done.
Facebook, X, and Google may censor you, but you'll never find censorship here.
Don't censor me!
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails in a moment after I visit with our friend Leland Vittard, host of On Balance and chief Washington anchor at News Nation. Leland, how are you?
Always good to be with you, Lars.
I got to ask you about a few things. I may get to Seattle and some of the dust up this last weekend in the Christians versus Antifa and the response of the city's mayor, who's now condemned the Christians and stood up for Antifa, which is bizarre even for liberal standards. But I wanted to ask you first about Joe Biden's auto pen. Now, I'm wondering how you answer this one, because people have asked me, you know, ever since Joe Biden left and we found out about the auto pen, and we said, did he know he was signing these documents? And if he didn't, are they still legitimate?
Good questions. I think at some point that is probably going to have to be adjudicated. I think there is oftentimes a lot of things that presidents don't necessarily know they are signing or that they were briefed on and they sign off on and move on. I think that the desire to void things like Hunter Biden's pardon and making hay on that, for me, it feels like a very niche issue for a lot of Americans, and it almost trivializes for Republicans what should be a really sober and thoughtful issue to talk about.
Well, the reason I haven't gone to the Hunter, I've mentioned that that's one of the issues, but the ones for me are the energy ones, where Joe Biden is, we're told, signed these things using an auto pen, except Joe Biden didn't talk about signing them. Most presidents who sign executive orders of any significance talk about them, and he didn't appear to know about them, including the one that Mike Johnson asked him about face-to-face just a couple of months after he allegedly signed it, about banning future exports or expansion of liquefied natural gas exports. That's potentially a multi-trillion dollar issue for the United States. And Joe Biden allegedly said, no, we're not going to allow expansion of it, except as near as we can find out, Joe Biden knew nothing about it. It was signed by somebody else. So if somebody does something like that and fraudulently applies the president's signature to something, that's not a Hunter Biden pardon. That's so a big deal.
Right. That is a different question. But again, I think that the cheap argument is the auto pen. I think we need to take a step back. Who was running the government?
Yep.
And I think there needs to be, and it's shocking to me, or not surprising, but shocking. Why do we not see more pictures of Mike Donlin and Steve Ricchetti and the First Lady's Chief of Staff and Joe Biden up on the screen? Those are the people who need to answer some really significant questions. And for all of the discussion about journalism and whether journalists dropped the ball, there's lots of reasons to debate why that happened. I think the more interesting story is why we are not seeing reporters chase down Mike Donlin, Anthony Ricchetti, and Ron.
Do you think
Klain.
The reason is they support Joe Biden and they liked what he did and they don't want to go after those issues? Because if you ask the question, you're going to get an answer, maybe.
Well, you probably get them running away.
Yeah.
And saying no comment.
But that tells you something, too. I mean, when the guy comes out of the courthouse with his coat pulled over his head, as a reporter, that always spoke volumes to me.
I don't disagree with you. This is the story of our time. And I think you rightly point out the lack of interest tells you that we still have a problem. And that is something that there should be real questions asked. And again, you're an opinion guy. I'm a news guy. But
yeah.
I think the right is losing the ability to have the moral high ground when it goes to the auto pen, because it cheapens what is a really important question of our time.
Well, I guess the only reason people go to the auto pen is it's a definitive event. In other words, you could say, well, I agreed to buy that house. Well, did you sign your name on the loan document? Did you sign your name on the purchase agreement?
That's fair.
Because those are definitive things. Like I worked in newsrooms occasionally and said, we're not going to talk about anybody who's a suspect until they've been indicted. Why? Well, because an indictment is an act by a government to say this person may be guilty of this crime. Until that happens, all we know is he's somebody or she's somebody that the police have been talking to about it. But once they've signed an indictment or a charge or made an arrest or put somebody in custody or booked them and taken their picture, those are definitive events that you can point to and say, well, they arrested him for it. You know, so now we can talk about whether or not he might or might not be guilty of it.
All fair points. And I think that is something that must be looked into. And I would add, it's surprising to me, color me shocked, that the primary author of this big book about the cover up isn't more interested in that, a la Jake Tapper. CNN has been known to do some very aggressive reporting. They've got more resources, actually, I think, than any other television news organization. And they can't find Jeff Zients or Mike Donlin or the first lady's chief of staff and shove a microphone in their face?
I don't think they're interested. By the way, I do want to ask you about what happened in Seattle over the weekend, and here's why. You remember Martin Niemöller and his warning, you know, when they came for the Democrat socialists, I wasn't one of them, so I didn't stand up. And when we saw, America saw, Jewish people being banned from college campuses, in effect, by the protesters on the campus. And we said, oh, that's sad. Yeah, that must be awful for them. And I warned people. I said, they're coming for you next. Well, they came for the Christians this weekend in Seattle. And amazingly, in the 13th biggest city in America, the mayor stood up for the assailants and openly condemned the Christians for being Christian.
We're doing that story on the show tonight, but in a broader sense, because I think you bring up a really important point, which is what's happening in liberal cities around America. There was mass riots in Los Angeles over the weekend. Did you see them anywhere? No, but
nope.
There were a bunch of police who were assaulted, and you had crowds defacing police cars and on and on and on. Then there is the debacles that are going on in Chicago right now, where Chicago has been given a negative credit rating. They can't pay any of their bills. They're trying to raise taxes. Companies are leaving, and the mayor is declaring is his big way to fix it, talking about how we need to have more intersectionality and celebrating African Day. I'm not making that up, by the way.
I know you're not.
This is the question, and I don't understand why Republicans aren't just loving this. What would President Newsom do? What would President Pritzker do? You know, that old line from Maya Angelou, when people show you who they are, believe them the first time. Okay, we know what progressive utopia leads to. We're seeing it in Seattle. We're seeing it in Los Angeles. We're seeing it in Chicago. Okay.
Yeah.
That is the choice that should be presented to the American people.
Great result in the midterms, then, if that happens. It's just, I'm amazed, like you are, that Republicans aren't absolutely jumping all over this. And saying this is the kind of thing that we're headed for if you don't head it off. And tell the voters that, because it'll be a powerful message, I think. That is Leland Vittert. He is the chief Washington anchor at News Nation. Leland, we always appreciate the time. Hey, I've got a little piece of news for you about lean. Lean is something I've tried myself, and it doesn't happen very often, so you want to jump on this. Brickhouse Nutrition's Memorial Day sale is on. For a limited time, save 25% on everything with my code MEMORIAL25. That includes lean, the weight loss supplement with the same target goals of those GLP-1 injections, but without the needles and without a prescription. People are seeing real results, and they love that it curbs the cravings. Check out the website reviews. Also on sale, Field of Greens, the superfruit and nutrition vegetable drink that literally promises your doctor will see the improvement in your health or you get your money back. Whether it's collagen, creatine, or any of their other doctor-formulated products, it's all on sale for 25% off. Kick off a healthy summer and save big while you're at it. Go to BrickHouseNutrition.com and use code Memorial25 for 25% off. Don't wait. The sale's only on for a few days. That's BrickHouseNutrition.com. BrickHouseNutrition.com and use code Memorial25 for 25% off. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarsen.com. Podcast, download, or stream this program. And you can always tell Alexa to play the Lars Larsen Show.
The Lars Larsen Show.
Follow Lars on Blue Sky at Lars Larsen Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larsen Show. I always tell you if I have a dog in the fight, and I've been an unabashed fan of nuclear power, nuclear-produced energy, and in particular electric energy for a long, long time. And I haven't changed that point of view. In fact, as the technology gets better, I become more enthusiastic about the technology altogether. What's sad is that America has pioneered most of that technology, and yet America lags behind the rest of the world, at least until Donald Trump, in actually pursuing commercial electric power. Paige Lambermont joins me now, who's a research fellow with the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Paige, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me, Lars.
Has President Trump actually put us on a path to get some clean, abundant nuclear power now with the executive orders he's signed?
Yeah, these new executive orders are a really great sign for the future of nuclear and the future of meeting our increasing power demand. Now that AI has come around, we're going to need a lot of power demand in the next couple of years. And unleashing our nuclear potential is a great way to get there.
Okay, so what is it? I mean, my read has always been it's not a problem that nuclear power doesn't pencil out or make sense economically. It's the problem has usually been government and the lawsuits and the court fights and the environmental fights and things like the National Environmental Policy Act. Am I off base there or is that where the problem needs to be solved?
Yeah, and I think that's right. The real problem is that because the nuclear power industry was sort of born captured by government, we don't even know what it looks like without incredibly insane red tape. We've really never seen since the very beginning a time when it could be built unfettered. It was built before the rules got too out of hand. It was built much more quickly and much more affordably. But we've never seen a truly like free market approach to nuclear. But these new executive orders bring us back closer to where they were when we were building reactors fast.
Okay, so can you run down for my audience some of the things that these EOs go after, and then maybe we can talk about some of my other concerns about things that ought to be addressed when it comes to getting the government out of the business of nuclear and maybe just to stand back at a distance and do what regulation is necessary, but the minimum.
Yeah, so these executive orders cover a wide range of stuff. Some of the sort of most important things are one of them reforms the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is the government agency that controls civilian nuclear power and which, as they point out in the executive order, has been around since the 1970s. 133 reactors were permitted and built before the
NRC.
Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
Yep.
Yeah, the NRC. And two have been built since the NRC.
kind of provides a clue as to why the industry isn't going anywhere, right?
Yeah. If you're wondering what's preventing new nuclear, it's a great clue. But so this executive order, works to reform the structure of the NRC. Its current model, which basically encourages it to spend as many hours as possible examining and permitting and doing all of those things because it gets paid for every hour it spends doing that rather than trying to do it efficiently and well and on issues that really matter. And it also will work to reform the linear node threshold method of assessing radiation, which is great because the linear node threshold method basically considers that no amount of radiation is safe. There's radiation in a banana. There's radiation in the phone in your hand. There's radiation from the sun when you walk out your front door. I mean, it's human beings do not exist in a world without radiation. It's literally impossible to. And so when you use that standard, you're not approaching things realistically in a way that actually tries to conserve human health while building new things. It's a method that makes it almost impossible to build new things. So trying to reform that will be really incredible.
Well, and can they get that done, Paige? Because I'll throw one more at you. I don't happen to live in a house that has granite countertops, but if you have granite countertops, they exude radiation. If you happen to live at a high altitude, like living in Denver, Colorado, you're getting a whole lot more radiation than those of us who live closer to sea level. So if and every time you heat something up in a microwave, you're using radiation right there in your house, and nobody seems freaked out about it anymore. They used to be, but all those things are sources of radiation. And yet the NRC's rule is no amount is considered safe?
Yeah, it's no amount is considered safe. It's a really insane system. My CEI colleague, James Broll, wrote a paper last year on reforming this model, and I recommend everyone check it out because the paper was before its time in what we've been seeing in this administration and really highlights, you know, the flaw in this system of thinking.
Well, let me ask you about one other thing that I don't think the EOs go after, but I'd love to see it because over the years, I mean, I've spent a long time being a nuclear enthusiast, but it's the Securities and Exchange Commission and the antitrust laws. And if you say, well, what does that have to do with anything? I just remember back in the 70s and the 80s reading that there were nuclear plants where they knew there was a problem with a particular way of doing something. But they couldn't share that with all the other, you know, if GE shared that with, I don't know, some of the other companies that build nuclear plants. I don't know if Bechtel was, I think Bechtel might have been one of them.
Yeah.
GE was one that they couldn't sit down and get together and say, hey, we all found out that this way of doing it doesn't work. This way of doing it does work, and sort of compare notes and do a lessons learned, because that would violate the antitrust laws of the United States, even if the companies were doing it to get a better outcome, saying, oh, no. Don't engineer your pumps that way. That will be that will produce a bad result. They couldn't share the information.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that would be an important reform. This doesn't cover that. I think that that would be more of a like an FTC issue because it's like antitrust and collusion stuff. But I think that allowing sharing of that information, I think, would be an incredibly helpful step for the industry. One of the things that they struggle with now is because so few reactors get built, no one has the expertise to iterate and to build them over and over again the same way. I mean, you know, you just saw Plant Vogtle take forever to be built and they got two units out of it. But then instead of, you know, that beginning somewhere else and iterating on that process, it sort of just stalled out. And so to see the industry rise to a point where iteration was more possible, I think would be kind of a natural complement to what you're talking about.
You mean it'd be like imagining that if every automobile in America was a one-off, hand-built and built to us, and then the next time you build a car, you say, let's start all over and design it from ground up. Yeah, that'd be nice, but a hand-built car would probably cost you $1 million.
Right. Like that method is great if you want an extremely niche, incredibly special product. But if you want something that's available sort of at scale and at, you know, at a frequency where people can actually access it and use it and build it, you're going to have much of a much more of an assembly line mentality.
That's Paige Lambermont, who is a research fellow with the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Paige, we appreciate your time. By the way, just in, Planned Parenthood CEO compensation, you know, that organization that kills almost 500,000 babies every year, paid its CEO almost $1 million last year. And some of that money was taxpayer dollars that helped fund it. Planned Parenthood is big abortion business that profits off baby killing. We have to stop Planned Parenthood, and I have just the team to make it happen. Join me in supporting America United for Life. Since their beginnings in 1970, AUL has been involved in every pro-life case presented before the Supreme Court. Their top-tier legal professionals are dedicated to defending life and protecting the unborn. AUL played a critical role in the legal strategy that contributed to overturning Roe, and now they're focused on exposing Planned Parenthood and closing those abortion centers permanently. Americans United for Life has helped save over 3 million kids. I'm looking for 50 pro-life listeners to donate $50 a month to stop this madness. Your tax-deductible donation saves the lives of babies and advances pro-life legislation nationwide. Your help is critical. Donate securely at aul.org/Lars. That's aul.org/Lars. Protect those lives and support Americans United for Life. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
the risks and rewards of remote work.
Where are you now?
I'm sitting in my office.
I doubt that.
Why would you doubt that?
If you were in your office right now, we'd be having this conversation face to face.
At least woke progressives won't stop you from listening to The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. And what about that auto pen that Joe Biden used during his 4 years in office? And what do we know about whether or not Joe Biden actually knew what he was signing or whether or not he signed anything at all? I think that's a worthy question, and it's being asked right now. Let me get into the details of it. First, if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it happens right here on The Lars Larson Show every day. And if you disagree, we're going to put you right to the head of the line. But you got to come equipped with the guts to actually advance your position. Now, if I was talking to Nancy Pelosi and she asked me that, I could give her about 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 things, maybe even a few dozen things we disagree about. Same applies to Chuck Schumer. Same applies to Joe Biden, if he can actually understand what I was saying. But if you're a naysayer, we're going to put you first. Just come prepared with your best argument. And if you disagree with something you hear on the show from me or from a guest, I want my audience to hear your objection. And if I can't answer that objection, well, then my argument probably isn't very worthy. But if you want to send an email, that's easy. talk@LarsLarson.com. And you can vote in our poll on X. We put up a fresh poll question every single day. You'll find it at Lars Larson Show and on our website at LarsLarson.com. Now, what about the auto pen? If you're not familiar with that term of art, it was something that was invented some time ago, some long time ago. And then it began to be used officially to sign legislation, to sign documents authored allegedly by the president of the United States. It began under Obama. Obama wanted to be able to sign a bill. He was on vacation in Hawaii. So he basically phoned the office or contacted the office. And there is now law that allows a president to remotely or authorize the signing of documents that would otherwise require him to be physically present. You know, what the folks in the real estate trade called a wet signature. I don't know if you've ever been through that before, but, you know, oftentimes you can electronically sign documents, but occasionally you run into one or two where they say, well, because this is a state document, they insist on a wet signature. That means you have to take an actual pen and apply it to an actual piece of paper and form your signature. A lot of us have unreadable signatures like mine. So what does that have to do with Joe Biden? Well, it turns out that an awful lot of, if not almost every single thing that Joe Biden signed, was signed with an auto pen. The one exception to that, famously, is the pardon that he issued for his dear old son, the coked-up, prostitute-loving Hunter Biden. Joe Biden actually signed that with his own name and apparently also signed his withdrawal from the race for president last August when he signed the piece of paper and said, OK, I'm not going to run for re-election. I'm going to let Kamala Harris have the nomination instead. That was signed with Joe's actual signature. But almost everything else in the White House was signed by an auto pen. Now, the question is, it's a legitimate signature if Joe Biden knew about it. Well, right now, three of President Biden's top aides, Deputy Chief of Staff Anthony Bernal, Deputy Chief of Staff Annie Tomasini, and Senior Advisor Ashley Williams have until tomorrow to agree to testify about their knowledge of the auto pens. And they're going to start with the pardons, first of all, and who was actually running the government. If they refuse, the Republicans on the House Oversight Committee, there will be subpoenas issued for the conspirators in this case. So, what's going to happen? Well, there are already objections from people who say, well, if Joe Biden never signed it, if Joe Biden didn't even know that somebody was signing it on his behalf, is that document actually legitimate? Does it count? If a piece of legislation, for example, was signed using an auto pen, which duplicates the president's signature, but it's not the president signing it, and it's done without his knowledge, so you can't say, well, Joe knew we were having it signed. It's just that his signature is a little shaky these days. So we used an auto pen. So it's a nice looking signature. If he didn't even know the document was being signed, then is it actually an authentic document? And there's another group called Power of the Future. We talk to Power of the Future from time to time. That's the nonprofit that advocates for jobs in American energy. And I don't mean solar panels and windmills. I mean things like drilling for oil and drilling for natural gas. They have taken a close look at 8 of Joe Biden's executive orders that were huge shifts in domestic energy policy. Now, here's what's curious. Lately, when President Trump signs an executive order, usually If he doesn't talk about signing the order before he signs it, he certainly talks about it after he signed it. In fact, there's a lot of attention being given today and yesterday to the executive order that Donald Trump signed on nuclear power. Well, we found out last week that he was going to sign it, and we talked about the fact that this order was coming. It just hadn't been signed yet. And now that it has been signed, people are talking about it, and President Trump has been talking about it. But Power of the Future found no evidence whatsoever of President Biden talking about the executive orders that he is alleged to have signed. And what they say is, they say that means they may have been signed by an auto pen and Joe Biden didn't know it was happening. Well, if he didn't know it was happening and didn't know what was being signed with his signature, then is that executive order actually legitimate? The executive orders include a ban on drilling in the Arctic in 2023, a 2021 executive order that committed the federal government to net zero emissions by 2050, an executive order mandating clean energy AI centers, and an offshore drilling ban that was an executive order just before he left office in 2025. Power of the Future's letter references House Speaker Mike Johnson, who in January, and I've told this story as well, he met with Joe Biden and he said, why did you sign that executive order that bans new expansion of liquefied natural gas exports from America? And House Speaker Mike Johnson said when he talked to President Biden face to face within a month or two of Biden allegedly signing that order, Joe Biden had no memory whatsoever of signing the order. Well, if he didn't remember it, maybe it's because he never signed it. And in that case, maybe the order doesn't exist. Hey, if something were to happen tomorrow, are you ready for it? A new virus or maybe a shortage, a supply chain collapse, whatever it is, your health cannot wait. And that's exactly why I want to tell you about All Family Pharmacy. It's a pharmacy that puts you in number one spot. They're on a mission to make America healthy again, helping families like yours stay stocked up and ready with the medications they need close at hand. They're not just selling medication, they're standing up for medical freedom and making sure Americans have access to the treatments they choose. While others are blocking access, All Family Pharmacy makes it available. They've got ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, methylene blue, mebendazole, antibiotics, even everyday meds, 200 medications available. And it's easy. No insurance, no hassle. Just go online, work with a licensed doctor who handles the prescription. The meds ship right to your front door. If you'd rather be stocked up than caught off guard, this is the option for you. Go to allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars and use my code Lars10 for 10% off. That's allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars and code Lars10. Take control of your health.
The Lars Larson Show.